Does that sound right to you?
The auntie with scarred hands grunted and turned away. The Ronin frowned. The answer pleased some, but he found it less telling than he might have desired. The caravan remained quiet after that. It drifted into parts and pieces down the road as friends and neighbors paired off, whispering together. Some managed to laugh. The imposing white plaster walls of Osol spaceport were in sight, and the sun was setting. They would get to rest in the warmth and light of civilization, and no one needed to fear a ghost unless they particularly wanted to.
"Except for you," she said.
She could be a bit of an ass. A cloud front had haunted the caravan for the past few kilometers, and just as Oso's gates came into view, it broke into a sudden, drenching rain. Most of the remaining caravan took off at a run. B-556 elected to retreat beneath the drooping limbs of an expansive tree beside the road. He did hate to get his hat wet. The Ronin joined him, half to see what the traveler would do. It was not, by this point, a question of whether they would stay, but how they would justify doing so. The answer? They did not. They simply lingered, observing the rain with a curious air, until they dug into the bag thrown over their shoulder and extracted a small pouch. This they offered to the Ronin. It contained a selection of speckled red fruits.
"Not in my diet, I'm afraid," they said.
"Are they in mine?" asked the Ronin.
"If you're asking whether they're poisoned, you'll have to take your inquiry to those sweet young ladies carrying their wares to market, you rude, rude man."
The Ronin took the fruits, which were more tart than sweet, but kind on his jaw, which had developed an ache in the returning damp. Not that the traveler could have possibly known about this particular pain, unless they knew far more about him than they were willing to confess.
"You're put out?"
The traveler sighed after a length of quiet. They crossed their arms, contemplative.
"My apologies. Was I insufficiently dramatic for your tastes?"
"My life is dramatic enough already." The traveler clucked their tongue in sympathy.
"Oh, the woes of an old warrior boldly flaunting at least one remarkably illegal weapon."
They glanced knowingly at the hilt of his lightsaber and at the scabbard into which it fit. The Ronin frowned, which the traveler waved off.
"I never saw a thing, Master Ronin. I only say it at all because our friends aren't wrong about the posters. And princes have sent more than that to every spaceport in the galaxy, even to this little world. If you're as tired of drama as you claim, you'll want to be a touch more careful once this rain lets up and we reach port."
B-5 sang a thank you because the Ronin remained thoughtfully silent. It was difficult to believe this person was one he needed to be warned of, and indeed, it was entirely possible that the voice had meant to warn him of someone else. But a Sith warrior was nothing if not clever. It would be better, he decided, to take his leave. If the traveler wanted more than his friendship and stories, they would pursue. And if they did so with a blade of their own, the Ronin would do what was required of him. If they wanted only those stories, well, it would still be better to leave them unsatisfied. Either way, he would have his answer. In the end, they weren't difficult to shake. The rain let up soon after, but the trio didn't reach the market until after dark. There, the traveler found both the local tea house and the cantina vying for their services. As they negotiated, the Ronin and B-5 continued on into the unnamed alleys of Oso in search of someone willing to trade a meal for a vagabond's skilled repair. As the caravan gossip suggested, the Ronin found there were indeed posters. He stood before the plastered walls of a communal storehouse that was covered with them. Some of the posters advertised holodramas, while others proclaimed the glory of the Genbara system's lord or his favored prince. More advertised the honor and compensation of applying to the armed forces of this or that prince, while a smattering posted the dates for the annual exams required of all the emperor's citizen officials. The freshest poster, still crisp at the corners, depicted a glowering, scarred face, a man wanted for banditry, extortion, and disturbance of the peace in the countryside. who had long plagued a mountain village only 2 days' walk from Oso. The bounty was considerable, the likeness unflattering. B-556 squawked, indignant.
"You're just mad they didn't mention you," said the Ronin.
B-5 opened a flap on his side and stuck out an articulated metal digit that sparked. Whether he was attempting to be rude or violent, he was interrupted.
"My, that's troublesome," said the traveler.
They stood beside the Ronin, and their frown was just visible beneath the curve of their mask.
"Quite the character, aren't you?"
There was no one else on this street, which wasn't far from the dockyard that made up the majority of the spaceport. It was an industrial sort of avenue that saw its fair share of foot traffic during the day, but on a quiet world like Genbara, most people let their lives be ruled by the orbit of the sun rather than by chronometer. It being dark enough for the river frogs to sing, the Ronin had expected himself to be quite alone but for B-5. It was troublesome indeed then to find the traveler had insisted on tracking them down.
"Now this seems like a bit of exaggeration," they went on. "But I thought you should know that there was a Gran at the cantina making all manner of wild claims. Something about dark warriors, Sith if you'll believe it, descending on a poor farming village in the mountains just south of here. I told him that I peddled in the fantastic, but his story was simply absurd. I'd just met a man coming from that direction, after all, and he surely would have mentioned an event as remarkable as the return of the Empire's most hated foes."
"Is that a warning?" asked the Ronin.
"I suppose it would be, if you had reason to need one."
It came a bit late. Another voice called from down the street.
"You! Sith scum!"
The Ronin glanced toward the voice. On one end of the street, at an intersection with the main avenue where the central market spread, stood not one, but a multitude of beings, all plainly armed and armored. Among them, the Ronin recognized the Grand Bounty Hunter from the village in the mountains, the one whose companions had been slaughtered by the bandits. B-5 crooned uneasily. The Ronin glanced in the opposite direction. Another group approached from that end of the street, far enough away that they were as yet concealed by the shadows of the darkened town. They carried themselves with an ambitious air, expecting a fight.
"Talk about trouble," the voice mused. "And just when you'd found a friend."
The Ronin snorted. The voice saw no reason to clarify her meaning, but he expected nothing and so couldn't be disappointed. He wasn't about to befriend anyone, least of all the sort of person who would tell a cantina full of bounty hunters that they had just entered town with the sector's most profitable target. He still sensed no particular enmity in the traveler. This disconcerted somewhat, given how many gruesome tales they surely knew of the Sith Rebellion. He would have expected revulsion, or at the very least, trepidation, but he detected only a trace of curiosity and a concerning degree of focus. Even if they weren't the sort of trouble he most feared, he could now be certain that, at best, they had a distasteful interest in brewing the sort of trouble that was. That was exceptionally irritating, but it didn't necessarily warrant murder. In any case, he could linger no longer. The Ronin sighed as he lowered himself to speak to B-5.
"Keep an eye on them."
Then he leapt straight up and swung himself cleanly onto the tiled roof of the storehouse plastered with posters. Below, B-5 cursed at him in binary, while the bounty hunters cursed at him in a handful of languages, and the quickest let loose the first wave of blaster fire. He sent no backward look to see who followed, but the memory of the traveler's interest flickered all through the chase, an unnerving tickle at the back of his mind.
Chapter 5.
Alarm bells clanged. Lights flared haphazardly across the town. Splatters of blaster fire sprayed upward at shadows that proved to be nothing. An open window, a futon hung out to dry. More troublingly, illumination spilled from within homes and outside businesses as the people of Oso woke to the clamor. The local Imperial troops had also been roused. The Ronin saw them here and there, smartly clad in their burnished red and black armor. Only a handful thus far, and he suspected they were alone, led by no Jedi. Otherwise, he would already have been found. The Ronin nevertheless understood this was a bad assumption. Thus, he kept to as-yet-shadowed roofs as he ran, feet swift and soundless even over the clay tiles. When he came to a fully lit intersection, a flick of his hand made the bright glare of the comm tower in the center of the square falter. In a sputter of dark, he leapt over the street from one slanted roof to the next and ran farther. His pursuers were more coordinated than he liked. They had left some half-dozen of their own at strategic intersections. These bounty hunters held amplified lanterns, which they swung to illuminate every moving darkness at street level and overhead. Small flying recon droids swooped past one another over the roofs, spotlights clashing as they vied to catch their bounty. One such droid, a narrow palm-sized disc with two thin articulated arms and a staring white eye in its middle, zipped past the Ronin where he crouched in the lee of a balcony. It slowed for a moment, swiveling its eye in his direction. The Ronin made a shooing motion with his hand. On the opposite side of the street, a loose tile skidded halfway down the roof. The little droid's eye light flared as it dived across the way toward the disturbance. The Ronin exhaled relief and took the moment to check his wrist cuff. It remained dark. B-556 had made no effort to contact him, so much the better. It meant the droid had no reason to. The Ronin had set no rendezvous point, but they would find each other in the end. They always did. Cautiously, the Ronin stepped just out of the shadow, the better to judge his course.
This would be so much easier if you took it seriously.
What do you mean by that? He muttered, though he knew.
You know who you are, what you are. This filth should be nothing to you. Why persist in pretending they deserve your caution?
He felt a tug at his waist, as if she had placed a hand on his lightsaber. He tightened his mouth against a frown. She knew better. He wouldn't turn such a weapon on anyone but those who could properly defend themselves from it.
You have alternatives, she said.
His fingers rested briefly on the second hilt. No, he could do without. That said, tonight he regretted himself a bit more pettily than he usually did. It had been a long time since he found himself hunted, since he had shown the world the kind of man he truly was.
You think you're hiding?
I thought that was obvious, he said, because he knew it would annoy her.
She didn't mean his skulking about in the dark of a nothing town. She meant his weapons, and that they lay in plain view at his waist, just as the traveler had criticized. But these two he didn't ever intend to hide, no matter how illegal any of them had become, nor that he would only be mistaken for a Jedi by those who had never met one. Every being he met deserved a warning before they faced him. Though some apparently took his gear as some kind of invitation instead.
They really are haunting you, aren't they? She said. You don't think that little fox is only after your story?
The Ronin scowled at her openly now, as if she were at his shoulder. But he was alone at the end of this dark stretch of tiled roof, which ended just before the massive main entrance to Oso's dockyard.
Even if a story's all they want, that would be bad enough. She knew it too. He couldn't afford a companion. Even a trustworthy friend was obligation and liability. What was she playing at?
A sudden light burst down the street toward the entrance of the dockyard, the beam broad and sharp. A land speeder. It had rounded the corner and was coming his way. Two bounty hunters sat in it, one to drive and the other to hold a lantern on a pole that shone so bright it illuminated every corner of the street. The Ronin threw himself forward, off the ledge of the roof that faced the dockyard. He clung to the eave with his fingers, the balls of his feet pushed against the wall to keep himself in the shadows. Then the light faltered, swerved, and he was obliged to haul himself back up onto the roof because his arms were shaking with fatigue. There, at the far end of the avenue, the land speeder spun in a tight circle. The bounty hunters who had been in it were still in evidence, but they clearly were no longer in control. The speeder spun higher and higher over the avenue, and it did so upside down. Its driver clung to the headrest of their seat, their feet kicking 5 meters above the ground. Their passenger struggled to clamber onto the skyward-facing bottom of the speeder, but the repulsor lifts threatened to jettison them off. Abruptly, the upside-down speeder fell toward the street. The bounty hunter screamed as it swooped at an angle. The whole thing collided with a gang of their compatriots dashing onto the avenue, and it bowled over the lot like an infuriated feral wall.
"Don't gawk," she hissed.
"Go."
The Ronin was already moving. Not back down the street. Light filled every crevice of the ongoing disaster behind him, but forward. He dropped off the roof into the alley beside the dockyard and ducked through the darkly yawning entrance. Though he slid into the shadows cast by dimmed ships, his ear strained to hear more of whatever the hell was happening outside. Blaster fire, of course. Screaming, yes, yes. The ceaseless mechanical cries of a machine compelled to function outside the physical rules of its being. There, that was the problem. No land speeder flew upside down. The fundamental tenet of its gravitational system forbade it. Only one power in the galaxy could so defy the laws of the universe. Someone, the force coursing through them, had seized the speeder with a focus and intent the Ronin had not seen in decades. A flagrant display of obscene control, and for what? To distract his pursuers?
"To herd you," she said.
Yes, every act of great power came from great need. Whoever had turned the black current against the bounty hunters wanted more than a distraction. They wanted him funneled away from the town and among the ships. Now here he was, slipping between and beneath the hulls of battered scout vessels, transports, and freighters. She watched him sneak, offering neither agreement nor warning, merely waiting to see what came of him next. Whatever lurked, she had already warned him of it. He couldn't yet say what shape it would take. He had lit too many small fires to easily identify the one that had caught best and brightest. All he knew was that he had flaunted himself most carelessly in the mountains. He had also managed to spend months missing news of galactic unrest, a political shift so dire that it had apparently agitated Imperial agents. And all this did concern him, though it wasn't his business. There was, on top of all this, the matter of the bounty hunters. Even if it was the traveler's fault that he was presently being pursued, they couldn't feasibly have summoned such a sizable collection of bounty hunters to remote Genbara within the few hours they were apart. Nor could they have put up those unbecoming posters of the Ronin's unsmiling face, not while walking beside him on a country road. No, the traveler was but fractionally culpable. Someone else had put a price on his head, perhaps the same someone who had tossed the speeder through the air like a plaything. Jedi, he thought, an old reflex that burned in his chest and head. The possibility, the threat, it dizzied him like river rapids. Yet even as he feared the thought, he doubted it nearly as soon as he had it. What manner of Jedi resorted to trickery and deceit? What Jedi lured their prey into the still dark of an empty dockyard? One he could not afford to underestimate. He sensed their next trick already. One ship, a sharp-nosed light freighter with broad, curved wings at its base, hummed nigh inaudibly. Its lights were yet dark, intentionally so, and no internal system that generated an excess of sound had been activated, but there was someone waiting within. Someone's, perhaps. The black current of the Force had always guided him first to the intricacy of electrical mechanism. He could more intuitively grasp the minute capacity for malfunction within a passing droid than he could the complexity of a living being that stood directly before him. Regardless, the people in the freighter didn't want anyone to know they were bringing it to life. It was to his advantage that he did. What did they intend? To fire on him? They had to know the futility of such an assault if they knew him for a Sith. Perhaps they thought to catch him in the full brunt of their engines bursting viciously to life. That he would want to avoid. Or was he nothing to them? Would they even know to fear him? The Ronin's fingers shook, slightly so. His chest shivered in sympathy, and he clenched his fist to ward off his frailty. He needed calm. Direction. A way out of this port and off Genbara before... The jerk at his waist was quite slight. He might not have noticed it were he not assiduously searching for some sign, any sign, of danger. The possibility that he would not otherwise have noticed, it disturbed him powerfully when he saw what had been taken. The telltale thrum of a lightsaber made him turn, his hand falling to his waist. His fingers found only one hilt. The other was gone, taken. And the blade flaring in the dark, not 3 meters away, was a distinctly familiar red. It illuminated the face of the Sith bandit, grinning, her teeth made scarlet by the light of the blade she had stolen from his waist. He understood her presence in his bones before he registered her in his brain. His blood ran cold and his heart beat in a great empty lack. He had not seen one of her kind in so very long. He was so sure he should hear a voice laughing in his ears, but there was only his breathing, low and shuddering, and the bandit, her focus entirely upon him. No further pause, the bandit came for him. The Ronin sprang back, skidding over the dust of the dockyard floor and having immediately to leap up to avoid a tangle of power cables. The bandit followed, lightsaber a furious whirlwind of movement. Everywhere he leapt, she was on him in an instant, gouging through Durasteel with her blade and leaving a trail of sparks. He spun out his scabbard auxiliary, readying himself to block her. He could trust no other weapon to do so, but his body, mind, soul wouldn't let him stand and engage. He could only think with the frenetic need of a drowning man that he had to get away, to find high ground. He feared clinically that he had begun to panic. In another lifetime, this would have shamed him. It didn't now, because he understood with horrible clarity the danger of what he beheld. A fallen warrior, no longer dead. A living curse. A demon, they'd called her kind during the war. The bandit would from now on pursue him with relentless need. She would never stop, not until she had him skewered on the length of his own blade and had carved his remains to her satisfaction, or the satisfaction of her master. And he was still tired and old and shaken. He felt his infirmity in the way he missed a jump by half a meter and had to scrabble up onto the jagged hull of a transport. And in how, when she whipped a reinforced cargo crate at his head, he ignited the scabbard auxiliary to cut it down when it would have been so much cleaner, smarter, to simply dodge. And he felt it when the bandit, stalking across the pitted hull of an ancient transport, lashed out with her arm and a wave of pure black current threatened to throw him off his feet. He kept himself upright with a ferocious desire, his robes whipping in the burst of her fury. The bandit never slowed. She flew forward, lightsaber a red wound in the night. He hadn't fully recovered his footing from the onslaught of her attempt to throw him from the hull, and he was forced to finally catch her blade with his. Their lightsabers hissed and crackled as they ground against each other. For a second, he met her eyes. Fire and amber, pupils blown, incandescent with her need to unmake him. He knew then, with the pulsing core of him, he would have to kill her again, or she would never fall. A blaster bolt cut through their clash. It lanced between the cross of their sabers, and where the bandit snarled over her shoulder, the Ronin once more leapt back, flourishing his lightsaber off and melting into the shadows beneath the nearest scout ship. The bounty hunters had found them, attracted by the unmistakable sounds of their fight. More of them fired toward the bandit. She deflected each bolt, then gestured roughly upward with her free hand. The Ronin had only seconds to understand what was happening before a bounty hunter, that poor foolish Grand from the village, came hurtling through the dark, limbs flailing straight toward him. This time he dodged. At the frayed edge of his conscience, it was all he could think to do. By some luck, the Grand flew past him and into a canopy of cargo netting. Netting that he could have sworn was too far away just a moment before. Either way, the bounty hunter tumbled into it with relative softness. Lucky, was it? She asked.
Not the time, he snapped. The bandit was coming for him again, bounding off the transport and lunging into his hiding spot. The Ronin dashed off under a hull, sprinting back toward the entrance. He now had a sense of what had happened. The bandit had cornered him in the dockyard to make it her death trap. Therefore, it was time to leave. As if in perfect time with that thought, his wrist cuff buzzed. A glance at his wrist showed the blue circle of light below his palm blinking a message. Up, said B5, and that was all. Indeed, the Ronin heard the creak of docking bay doors opening overhead. A blanket of moonlight spilled over the vessels. Up. Yes, that would do. The Ronin gathered white flare in his legs, crouched, and jumped up onto the nearest hull, a scouting vessel, then up again to the next, the laser-scarred shielding of an off-model freighter. He leapt again and again, making his way toward a pyramid of cargo crates beside loading machinery and a web of maintenance walkways. Between these, he would be able to clamber his way to a position that would let him make a final jump to the dockyard roof. He felt the bandit's pursuit not via the force, but through instinct and understanding. He didn't look or listen for her. It was unnecessary. She followed him as surely as a tide followed the moon. She gained on him steadily. This he felt in the shiver of the white flare and black current. She nipped at his heels, a white-spiked fury boiling in black surf. She was a vision of a warrior. What a Sith she would have been. Weakness made him stop a second too long. He dared to turn and see her. They stood across from each other in pale light, he on top of the pulley rigging that let crews load their ships. She crouched on a maintenance walkway, pulsing lightsaber held low and at the ready. They were separated only by empty space and many meters of distance, so much farther apart than they had been on the log as they rushed down a raging river, yet it felt like she was on the verge of sinking her teeth into his throat. Stop running, she spat, and her voice was so very much the same as it had been the last time she demanded he kill or be killed. This doesn't end until you face me. He knew it to be true. Yet end it did, prematurely, when a light freighter's engines roared. It was the long, sharp-nosed ship that he had seen readying its systems when he first entered the dockyard. It surged up from the floor, broad, scarred wings extending as it scattered the bounty hunters surrounding it, and it came to a skillful halt between the Ronin and the bandit. The stenciled writing on its side called it the Poor Crow, and its lower hatch hung open from its bottom, the walkway extended toward him. Through it he saw B5, who shrilled at him to jump. Quite the executive decision, muttered the Ronin. They could argue about it later. For the last time, he leapt. He flew through the air, grasping toward the crow's walkway, but he had miscalculated. The bandit leapt too. He saw what would come next in the fragment of his mind's eye, where he at times beheld such things, a flash colored by the visceral shades of shifting possibility. The bandit would grasp him either by his limb or by his robe, and it didn't matter, because either way she would knock him askew, and with that he would lose his chance. They would fall to the ground, and even if B5 and the crow returned, it would be too late, because she would have had the upper hand for too long, and he would already be dead. Yet the moment he grasped the inevitability of his fate, it broke. The bandit's body jerked mid-flight, struck in the torso from the side by no visible power. She flew back through the night air and collided with a cargo tower, her lightsaber slicing through the crates she fell past. The Ronin saw this from the crow's walkway, onto which he had landed safely, and scrambled up as he stared down. The bandit had not merely fallen, she had been pushed. And not by an assaulting wave of black current, such as she had thrown at him mere minutes before, but a powerful targeted blow of that same power. And whether she had been too wholly focused on the Ronin to withstand it, or because the push itself had been so eerily precise, she fell. He was free. Free to run, in any case, which he had long since learned was not much freedom at all.
Chapter 6.
The Ronin stood as the Poor Crow roared out of the docking bay into the night sky.
The walkway closed as he moved up into the ship. Inside, B-556 rocked side to side and trilled in that fretful tone between anxious and infuriated. Beside him crouched the traveler. They stood as the Ronin neared, wiping their palms on their wide white trousers and tilted their head, smile just visible beneath the curve of their stylized mask.
"You seemed in need of an exit strategy,"
they said.
"So I was," said the Ronin. "I suppose you're the better liar between us."
"A convenient one, though."
The traveler turned their back to the Ronin as if they had nothing to fear, and beckoned him down a well-lit corridor.
"I've helped you leave, which I think we should consider a public service. That Sith warrior down there seems quite set on hunting you down, which I suspect means she'll stop pestering those poor folks planetside in favor of chasing after us. What a favor we've done them."
The Ronin followed the traveler, hands in his sleeves. B-5 trailed at his heels, muttering placations. The signals the droid sent to his cuff told rather a different story, a warning in a pattern of blue flashes.
"Play along, why don't you? When's the last time someone who knew you for a Sith didn't try to stick a blade between your ribs?"
Her encouragement left him all the warier. She had directed him to the traveler, after all. Just what did she hope to see them do? The Crow was tidy and well-kept, though spare and visibly cobbled together in places. He heard no other passengers, though someone had to have prepared it for launch in the docking bay, and someone had to be flying the thing. It relieved him somewhat to know there were so few to concern himself with. The corridor opened up into a wider stretch, broken by sliding panels that had now been folded into the walls. This made for a modest gathering space and galley, though it also was empty. As the traveler stepped into it, the sound of the ship changed, as did the feel of it under the Ronin's feet. The Crow had begun its ascent through Genbara's atmosphere into the black of space. The Ronin was by at this point ragged and well aware of it. His options were limited. He did not trust the traveler, nor this rescue, and neither did B-5. Thus it was with a kind of exhaustion that he sighed and unsheathed the second weapon that hung at his waist. The blaster had an unusual elegance because it was old, and because it was more often maintained than it was used. In the same motion he withdrew the weapon, the Ronin fired it at a panel in the hallway, in front of which B-5 had strategically lingered. The panel fell away, smoking, revealing a mess of piping, wires, and other circuitry. The Ronin had a certain technical expertise, yes, but the Crow's innards proved to be as much of a collage as its hull. He was very possibly about to regret this. He expected that he would more likely regret it if he let the traveler stop him. They had turned in shock at the sound of the blast, and he had less than seconds to act. So the Ronin flicked his wrist, and with a black current he tore the first wire he saw from its mooring and prayed. Gravity faltered. How fortunate. The traveler let out an "Oh!" of surprise as their feet left the floor, and another grunt as the Ronin grasped the back of their neck via the black current. It wasn't a choking hold, but it pacified, and it made clear the holder's intent. With that mask, he still couldn't quite see their expression, but they didn't seem to be in a panic, which was either admirable or quite foolish.
"I would have you explain yourself," said the Ronin, his feet incongruously anchored, though everything else within the ship had begun to bob up into the air, except for B-5, who had engaged the magnetic clamps retrofitted into his treads to remain stuck on the floor. "For every lie, another system goes dark."
"So dramatic,"
said the traveler, very nearly enthused. A man less experienced in interrogation might have missed the tension in the back of their tone.
"Ask away. I do hope to keep the air around."
"You knocked down the bandit?"
"Yes."
"You upended the speeder?"
"Yes. I'm sorry, I thought you had questions."
The Ronin waited a silent second. The traveler raised their hands.
"You were looking for me, weren't you?" he said. "On the road to Osol. Why?"
"Oh, now that's simple. I..."
Before the traveler could answer, a white flash exploded through the hall, followed by a roar of static. Some manner of grenade, the Ronin thought, just before the next staggering sensation hit. The end of his staff collided with the soft flesh under his sternum. An electric charge followed, surging through the metal into his body. The Ronin crumpled and lost his hold on the traveler. For a moment, they tried to brace themselves in thin air, then some unseen crew member re-engaged gravity. Everyone who had not already been on the deck thudded onto it, the traveler and the rescuer. This latter was a wizened old woman in a whirl of dark robes who sprang up as nimbly as a grasshopper, staff twirling in her hand. It whistled through the air, aimed at the Ronin's skull. If it made contact, it would drive his nose into the metal plating of the deck with breaking force. B5 didn't care to let it. He let out a screech and charged the woman's knees, half a dozen hatches flying open on his sides to reveal sparking, spinning, slicing tools meant for cutting and welding Durasteel, excellently suited to wrecking flesh. The traveler, still on the floor, threw out a groggy hand. Another of their characteristically precise manipulations of the black current shoved B5 off course to the droid's shrill protest. This placed a lot of them at four separate corners of the galley hall. They faced one another with battlefield readiness, each weighing the direction they should first strike.
No, 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 no! How many times do I have to say it? No force nonsense on my ship!
The shouting came from over the comm. It was young and feminine for all it snarled.
It's not the force, Akia dear, said the old woman.
Her eyes never strayed from the Ronin. One hand shifted to adjust her hold on her electro staff. The other went to her belt and sash, heavy with pouches that were no doubt full of other disorienting tricks.
It's just good preparation.
It's a mistake, is what I think it is.
The traveler declared this while staggering upright, hands up toward all three others.
We were only better defining the situation, Auntie. No one...
I understand the situation, the Ronin replied.
You understand nothing,
she snapped. The Ronin balked at the strangeness of her tone, sharp with something he might have called fear had he not known her better. No, she needed him off guard. There could be no other explanation. She wanted his death, and he would, as ever, refuse to oblige. The Ronin's hand fell to his sash. He missed his proper lightsaber, but he still carried the scabbard auxiliary, and that was all he needed. It would be far less precise to shred into the crow's gut with than his blade, but he had lost the luxury of time the moment he lost the element of surprise. So he would do what he needed to, even if it required breaking the ship in its entirety. It was a clean thought, practical and direct. Beneath it slithered something cruelly cold and unexpected. He found his palm was sweating, his breath was rank in his throat. He had broken ships before. It was brutal and he regretted it, but it was also necessity.
Necessity?
This time her snarl came with a barrage of colors spun from 100 lives, tessellated upon one another into a single dense and vibrant image. Her face locked in an expression of furious grief.
You think you ever knew the word?
The accusation stole his voice from his throat and the will from his fingers. He expected, in the far-off fog of his thinking mind, that he would soon be dead. She had succeeded. He was too caught by the reflection of her grief to defend himself. The violence did not come. To his right, he saw the traveler raise a low, cautious hand at the old woman, who reluctantly lowered her staff. The Ronin let out a slow, slow breath. He took his hand from the remaining weapon at his waist and held it to his forehead. B5 whined, tools still out and whirring with sparks. The Ronin shook his head.
What do you want?
He asked, harsh with fatigue.
Well,
said the traveler to the growing silence of the room,
what we really wanted was your help.
You must be wondering why we'd go to such trouble to rescue an errant Sith warrior, said the traveler as they poured tea into unpretentious ceramic cups.
These sat upon the low wooden table that had unfolded from the poor crow's galley deck at the press of a button. The wood was dinged and scratched, but it was real. The Ronin caught himself wondering where it had come from. He suspected he had not earned an answer. He sat on one side of the table alone, but for B-556. The traveler had taken a seat on the other side next to the old woman, called Chia, who accepted her cup with idle calm that belied the intensity with which she maintained her focus on the Ronin. She masked her attention well. She had fought Sith before.
"What part of your rescue involved pointing me out to the local bounty hunters?" asked the Ronin as he accepted his own cup.
Now, that was all you," said the traveler. "We had nothing to do with the wanted posters either, thank you very much. That's just what you get for waving your lightsaber around when the local authorities are already on edge. There is a war waiting in the wings, you know."
B5 hummed an accusatory scold. The traveler waved a hand to concede their point.
"I suppose I did use all that to herd you onto our ship, but that was just very expedient of me."
"My ship, Fox. And for the record, not feeling so hot about you dragging this walking grudge against gravity generators onto it." This came from the far side of the galley. The poor crow's pilot was a round-faced young woman with a muss of thick black hair. An impressive array of tattoos, floral and colored, spun down her muscled arms. She sat cross-legged away from the table, not deigning to share it with the rest. She had preoccupied herself with cleaning the panel the Ronin had shot from the wall because it seemed she found looking at the Ronin ruinously irritating. "Would you tell him that the next time he throws a tantrum on the crow, I'm throwing him out the airlock?" B5 warbled indignation.
"Let's be fair, Akia," said the traveler. "It was less a tantrum than a strategically calculated threat to commit multiple homicide. But to the point, I feel obligated to explain our interests, Master Ronin, although I'm afraid it requires revisiting a subject you are somewhat reluctant to hear anything about."
"I would rather you tell it than force me to ask any more leading questions," said the Ronin.
"I'll spare you the theatrics, at least."
And though the Ronin didn't wish to hear the story told at all, he appreciated this.
"Popularly, it begins with that fellow they called the Dark Lord. They say he was a Jedi first, a knight, of course, because how else would he have come to wield a lightsaber? But he was ill-suited to the role. Temperamental, arrogant, and hungry for power. Small wonder he turned on his fellow knights, and with such ambition. He rebelled against the clans, against the Empire itself, and recruited droves of ignoble warriors to his cause. Together, their army came to be known as the Sith, after that legendary demon host. They cut down Jedi by every dishonorable trick imaginable, stealing their lightsabers and their kyber. They desecrated the once sacred crystals until the kyber bled, and refashioned them into all manner of unbecoming shapes, perverting the law of the sword, etc., etc. I'm sorry, I told you no theatrics, but here I am letting my opinion out. To the point, off they go, that dark army, conquering planets left and right, turning the hallowed force upon the very populace they were meant to protect. Such wicked folk, don't you think? Especially when they targeted the temple-strewn peaks of old Reizu, the sacred heart of the Empire, its ancient home. What monsters! It was a maddening blow to see Reizu taken by those who bore so little respect for its heritage. Although, well, you would have to be a bit of an academic to put it like this, but one could say that until that day, the Empire wasn't really the Empire. It surely had once been, centuries ago, but all it had known for generations was the feuds of lordlings vying for control over this or that stretch of space. But this bit of Sith sacrilege, well, it gave those lords a reason to unite. Not that ultimately this alliance had anything much to do with winning the war. Within days of Reizu's subjugation, the Sith fractured, fell into infighting, took one another clean out. Who can say why? Perhaps they were possessed by angry gods, spirits, so forth. Perhaps Reizu itself cursed them. Perhaps they sullied what they shouldn't have. All manner of artifacts were kept in Reizu's esteemed temples, some well known to be spiteful when ill-used. The storied Kyber mirror of Shinsui Temple, for example. But that's another sort of tale. Whatever the case, when the Sith fell, they took Reizu with them. It vanished. Where it had been, there was but space. An emptiness. A nothing. It pained the Empire to see its homeworld taken, disappeared without a trace. But oh, in the same breath, the Empire was so very relieved to see that, conveniently, evil had proven the seed of its own destruction. Indeed, the Empire has enjoyed these 20 long years of peace ever since. All that lordly bickering done away with, thanks to the accidentally civic-minded Sith.
Here the traveler paused, sipping their tea. They spoke with a lilting cadence, their rests as intentional as their words. This quiet lingered. If they were waiting for the Ronin to speak, well, he was waiting too, though he did so unconsciously at first. As the silence dragged on, he realized what he wanted to hear was also what he was being denied. The voice. She said nothing. Was she still angry with him? She had every right to be. But then she had urged him toward this traveler, as well as to listen to them. What did she wish for him here, if not death? He was afraid to ask. More than an answer, he feared she wouldn't respond. The traveler offered mercy.
The thing is,
they said, placing their cup back down on the table,
we have reason to suspect the Sith might not be as disappeared as people like to think. That warrior you were tussling with, for example, she seemed a bit off to me. What about you?
Well, said the Ronin, I did kill her a few days ago.
This made the old woman's gaze sharpen fractionally. The pilot, meanwhile, had given up pretending to care about the panel in her lap. She stared hard at the Ronin, simmering with distrust.
Yet she didn't look particularly dead,
said the traveler, easy as ever.
Which is disconcerting, given the implication. It's been ever so long since the galaxy saw such vigorous ghosts. Although if we believe the gossip on the road, perhaps we've only just noticed it's happening. The disappearing dead. Do you recall? I suppose now we've seen what happens when those expired Jedi wander off. Although I'm not about to claim they've all been remade as demons bent on pursuing you. What do you make of it all?
Are you asking me if any other Sith got up after I killed them? Asked the Ronin.
Did they? No? Then that just goes to show it is a new and pressing concern. We're after the reason underlying these resurrections, you see. That infamous witch, as they called her. She seems less vanished than we thought. Not that we've had any idea where to find her.
What would you do if you did?
The Ronin willed his face impassive as he asked. B5 beside him remained unusually silent. The old woman and the pilot had both gone still, but the traveler bowed their head, a kind of apology.
What would you?
They asked.
We don't like to presume, but for all you carry the mark of a Sith, you don't seem too fond of them. You proved as much when you tried to kill that woman who's hunting you down. Well, when you did kill her. And the others before her. Oh yes, we know your credentials. How did you imagine we tracked you down? In any case, we find ourselves in need of someone who might have a better sense of where to look for that clever old witch. And seeing as you've such a sterling record of hunting down others of your ilk, we did hope you might lend us your expertise.
A tension built within the galley hall, winding all its occupants into tighter and tighter knots. The old woman and the pilot stared with equal reservation, though the old woman hid it better. The traveler also coiled, even beneath their fluid demeanor. The Ronin wished fervently that the voice would tell him what to think, but she maintained her silence.
Even if she spoke, he knew she wouldn't answer the questions he now needed to ask. What had changed? He didn't imagine she had ever liked to see him kill Sith, but she had always permitted him those victories. If he could no longer properly fulfill the hunt, his last obligation, then he had two choices. He could surrender, or... No, he would not choose. Not yet. Not until he better understood just what had happened to the witch. He owed her that much, at least.
Reizu, he said. The witch took it, and she's kept it for her own. We'll need to find a way back.
His acquiescence evidently shocked his new comrades. The old woman's eyebrows shot up, and the pilot's eyes widened. The traveler, meanwhile, recovered their calm as nimbly as they hid their anxiety. A hint of a smile curled from beneath their mask.
Where do you suppose we ought to begin our search, Master Ronin?
The Ronin stood. Tension returned to the old woman's frame, and the pilot's hand strayed unconsciously to her side where she kept a blaster. The traveler showed no sign of fear whatsoever. The Ronin wanted to call them a fool, but he had learned better.
Set a course for Dekian, the Ronin said to the pilot. We'll find a relic there, sacred to the Sith. It will guide our path.
The little crew exchanged odd, uneasy looks, but the pilot seemed to like what she saw in the traveler's posture. She nodded and got up also, heading for the cockpit. The old woman remained in her seat to finish her tea, and she placed a subtle hand on the traveler's wrist. This was no doubt to stop them from following the Ronin, who had turned on his heel. B5 lingered behind, sensing the Ronin wished to be alone. At least, the Ronin wanted to believe that was the reason. He knew the droid hadn't much cared for how he conducted himself in those long-ago days they had both just been reminded of.
Chapter 7.
Koru drifted in space, hating it. She was a deadened thing out here, more so even than she had been in that derelict temple behind the waterfall. It had always been this way for her. From her first journey into the black, when the Jedi came to claim her for a distant clan, the stars had never been anything but a hungry, taking light. That she willingly subjected herself to them now was testament to her need. She sat hunched over before the controls of the scout vessel she had hijacked, her eyes on the screen tracking the poor crow. Damnably, her attention was of needs divided. The lightsaber Koru had stolen sang to her with an insistence she'd never felt before.
What do you make of it?
Koru half thought she heard a voice. She didn't bother looking for it. She had done so the first few times the whisper cloyed in her ear. It had made her feel foolish to find no source, which she loathed. So she wouldn't look. Already she could barely remember the nothing words she hadn't thought. She returned her attention to her stolen prize, her broken prize. Koru had encountered the flaw after she stole the scout ship and was alone inside it. No matter how she manipulated the hilt, the red length of the old man's lightsaber would not retract. While this explained in part his need for that dreadful scabbard, she had no similar recourse other than to stick the thing into the hull. Therefore, she broke it further, disassembled the entirety into its component parts. Koru couldn't quite explain how she'd done it so deftly. Old instincts, perhaps? Or need? Regardless, she was lucky to have the components largely intact. They lay before her on the console, waiting to be reconfigured. It would be no mean feat. Koru had constructed her own lightsaber and her auxiliary, but she was no technician.
You have my aid. Where you need it.
Koru's hand fisted over the dismantled parts, and she shook her head, free of murmurs. Focus. She required focus. Looking over the lot, she encountered two oddities. First, the components. Koru examined each in turn, yet for the life of her, she could find no obvious imperfections, nor anything missing that she expected to need. The cycling field energizer showed unusual signs of wear, as was to be expected. The blade had been caught in a perpetual loop. Had that been by design? Yet as Kuoru rebuilt the lightsaber, she couldn't discern what mechanism might have triggered such a loop. Broken after all, then? But if that was the case, it couldn't have been broken so terribly, or she couldn't have solved the problem so easily. Once reassembled, the hilt in Kuoru's palm remained inert. It would not emit a blade until she told it to. And here was the second strangeness, the ornamentation. The lightsaber looked old, the oldest it was possible for such things to be. It looked, in short, like an heirloom blade, the sort the scion of a Jedi clan would wield. Kuoru turned the reconstructed hilt over in her hands, running her thumbs over the worn leather strips wound around fingernails of shiny metal, and across the curve of the plain guard at its end. As a weapon, it was beautiful. As a weapon of the Sith, it made no sense. Kuoru ignited the lightsaber, as if she needed to be sure of its color, even though she had only just laid eyes on the kyber from which the weapon drew its hue. The red blade sprang forth, and the kyber crystal within seemed to murmur against her palm. It reminded her, faintly, of her own blade, now gone. Her lightsaber had always seemed somehow to be fighting her. She had pieced it together in the shadow of a battlefield, the kyber crystal freshly stolen from the lightsaber of a Jedi her master had watched her fell mere hours before. "It seems a waste to destroy a weapon already forged," Kuoru had said.
"Better to make it your own," her master had responded. "Don't whine. You have the blueprint. And tell me if you're troubled. I didn't like making mine either, but we help each other, Kuoru. All right?" This was how the Sith had fashioned their sabers, built to the order of the holographic blueprints shared from cell to cell. There was a man who'd drawn them, Kuoru knew, another Sith, whose instinct lay in mechanical spark and pathway. He'd sent the auxiliary plan soon after Kuoru finished her blade. She had seen the promise of his offering when her master's saber was reforged as a shining red fan. Kuoru's lightsaber had never whispered as sweetly as this scion's blade. It had bucked, snarled at her. She had relished the struggle to properly wield her weapon. It had kept her focused and determined. Now she felt the difference. The stolen lightsaber in her hand, for all it had been strangely askew within itself, was an extension of her flesh. A masterpiece. It unsettled her, in part because she hated any intimacy with this emblem of the Jedi, and in part because it simply couldn't exist. No Jedi heirs had ever joined the Sith. They wouldn't have. As the legacy of the clan's inherent cruelties made flesh, the Scions had been the Sith's most hated foe.
How else to explain it?
The question came in earnest, even if she couldn't precisely determine where it had come from, and thus it demanded an answer. Kuoru thought, to her creeping horror, that she could provide one. She raised her eyes over the red glow of the lightsaber to where the poor crow lurked in the dark of space. A man waited for her upon it. She wanted, first and foremost, to be angry with him. For killing her. For... Her breath hitched. No matter how she gritted her teeth, it was fear that slicked through her veins. There was one among the Sith who had chosen a strange shape for his lightsaber. No clever auxiliary for him, no. Instead, he had styled his hilt after a scion's inheritance, a bloodline blade. It had been a declaration, "I am my own blood, and these are my own people. Never again do I serve the Jedi. Never again do I yield to their lords." At the thought of that man, Kuoru's mind was hazed by the pressure of space, cluttered by memory. She drew into herself in the scout's vessel's cockpit and breathed, though not as deeply as she should have. Despite her efforts, the recollection seeped forward and suffused her mind.
"Yes, Kuoru. Fear. Fear comes first. Feed it. Nurture it. Do this, and you'll have your fury when you need it."
Mere days after their victory on Reizu, word came. The Empire had rallied and the Lords had forged new alliances. There would be no more room to breathe, heal, and mourn the lost. A great fleet was gathering under the Emperor's banner, and the Sith would defend the world they had claimed for their own, or they would die. Koru and her master were called to the flagship, the Dark Lord's own vessel. She had gazed up at the great pitted hull with such young-hearted pride. It was a hideous beast, and it had survived many horrors. She thought it a powerful thing. She was pleased to serve it and her lord, the lord she had chosen. She never did see the man before the end. It was known that he was angry, that he had quarreled with the witch. Koru thought little of this. She quarreled with her master all the time, and what did that matter? They loved each other still, and they would serve each other until they died. That was the promise of the Sith Rebellion. The Lord and the Witch had declared it so. Koru knew it was true, because for that promise they had sworn to take Reizu, and had Reizu not fallen? It had seemed so simple at the time. The end began as they came upon an arm of the Imperial fleet, one composed of medical freighters and transports. They meant to claim the freighters for their own. They had lost so many supplies on Reizu. It would be grueling, Koru knew. She was tired. They all were. But they had just shown the galaxy what they could do when they did it for each other. They could burn any world they chose. Not a shot was fired before the Dark Lord's flagship began to break around them. Koru remembered the dim dark of every corridor interrupted by flashing lights, the screech and buckle of a ripping hull, the roiling sparks and choking smoke. They thought it a Jedi attack or some other Imperial terror. An infiltration, someone swore. There was a point in the belly of the flagship where it had all begun to shatter. Koru said, "Then let's find them." Her master said, "Yes." She was lying, Koru learned. She followed her master thoughtlessly, led by trust, and only realized her error when she had been shut into an escape pod alone. The last thing Koru saw through the viewport, she came to think it a dream, a nightmare. But for those first years, she swore to herself that she saw her master unfurl the graceful fan of her saber as if her blade was more than light sans substance, as if a weapon built to cut through flesh could do anything to mend a ship torn full asunder. As if in the smoke of that collapsing ship she had some enemy to meet, a murderer, one who thought gutting a ship wasn't enough if he could have no blood with it, a man who closed in on her, holding a long red blade fitted to an old and beautiful hilt. Then there was nothing but Koru, left to drift long hours in space, not dead, not alive, but screeching. She had wanted to cut through the walls of her pod and sink her blade into deserving flesh, to rend something, anything with her nails and teeth. But space and propulsion separated her from any possibility of satisfaction. She screamed her rage at that too, until her throat was bloody and soundless when she landed on the muddy ground of a backwater outer rim planet and its shanty distilleries. It was days before she reached a proper spaceport and got word of the galaxy beyond that murky pit of a world. The war over. The Sith dead. Dead because they had killed themselves taking Reizu. Or because they had killed one another. Or because the ghosts the witch had stolen had at last turned on their cruel mistress and... But that wasn't the truth, was it? You knew better. Koru clutched the hilt of her stolen blade, exquisite and familiar, and stared fixedly at the ragged transport hanging in the black. The Crow. Her quarry. The Sith hadn't died on one another's blades. They had died on only one. He had killed her, too, in the end.
And would you call yourself dead? Koru?
What could she call herself, other than hateful? Koru's thumb trembled on the lightsaber's control. She turned it off, the blade withdrew, and she let out a shaking breath. Whatever was wrong with the old man that had made him unable or unwilling to fix his blade, Koru had done it where he failed. Now it was hers to wield, hers to control. She snorted and loosened her limbs.
The panic had receded, and she could think again, enough to wonder at herself. She had spent so many years playing Lord of the Muck in the dust of the Outer Rim, carving a niche out of insignificance just to know herself alive. All that play-acting, when she could have been hunting him. The man who had taken her reason to live when he took the lives of all the others. The man who had only days ago killed her with a lightsaber she now held, just as he had killed her master. The traitor had been no delusion, she now realized. She, grieving girl, had not concocted him in her desperation to blame someone for the terrors she had endured. He was as real as the relentless blade she had wrested from his waist. He...
Pay attention.
Koru's eyes flicked up to the screen, tracking the poor crow, just as it jumped to hyperspace. She scanned the calculations, assessing its trajectory, and keyed commands into the scout vessel as she did so. Never once did she question her familiarity with the scout ship's systems, or where she had learned to manipulate them. Her bright fixation blinded her to the oddity of her newfound conviction. She was going to kill the old man. She knew this, and had known it for days now. What lit her up anew was the understanding of why. It would mean something for him to die. It would make room for something new to live, to be reborn. The flame of the rebellion he had extinguished would find fuel in the blaze of his demise. Koru would make it so.
Chapter 8.
One face, stricken with horror, mouth elongated with death, became another. This one, slack in shock. The next, twisted and rageful, more and more, eyes wide and darkly shining, then dull and unfocused. One death upon more. The stench of burning cloth and metal and flesh so deeply saturated in his nose that for weeks and months, every time he inhaled, the singe tickled his throat. Her face, last and most striking. The length of her black hair undone, wild with the throes of her fury and resignation. Her grief, the long croak pouring out of her throat, the wordless wail that became a curse. He wished to kneel before her, hands on his knees, to lay his neck out for her sentence. Instead, his hands gripped the hilt of his red blade as he lifted it up and... The Ronin jolted upright. He had been prodded, a finger to his cheek. He came to himself, where he had sat, cross-legged on the ground. He had chosen an out-of-the-way offshoot of the main corridor near to the back end of the poor crow, just by the point where he had entered through the lower hatch. The offshoot led to the storage area where one might keep gear for less hospitable climbs and little else. He had thought it the most unobtrusive place to simply be, and he had rested his back against the hull to think. Now every muscle he was aware of ached. The traveler was crouched in front of him, hand hovering in front of them, finger still outstretched. From this angle, the Ronin couldn't make out their face behind the fox mask, but he expected they were smiling, and smugly at that.
"You really are in terrible shape," they said. "You didn't even hear me."
"You aren't a danger," the Ronin said. He meant, "I would have known if you meant to kill me."
"Flatterer."
The traveler stood and nodded him upward as well.
"Come on now. This is the most depressing place imaginable for anyone to fall asleep."
"I was meditating."
"Then meditate in a bunk."
It would take a few days to reach Dekien, the traveler explained as they led him down the main corridor of the Poor Crow. There were few established hyperlanes here in the Outer Rim, and furthermore, they wished to take a circuitous route to avoid detection. Whose detection? They didn't specify.
"I don't suppose you're hiding an instinct for this sort of navigation?"
they asked over their shoulder.
"No? What about some manner of concealment?"
"Not that either."
Just the unsparing instinct for sophisticated mechanical sabotage, then. Oh, well.
You're nosy, said the Ronin.
Sociable.
The traveler paused before a door that swished open to a spare cell of a bunk. There was no lock on it. Within, a bed, a table, a lantern, empty shelves.
Listen, you're underslept, underfed, and embarrassingly rusty.
The Ronin agreed with all three, but frowned for dignity's sake.
No need to sulk. I say it because we want you in top form by the time we're chasing after your ominous relic. Now, it's going to take us a few hours to clear sparring space, so you have at least that long to sleep like a person and eat like one, too. And if you'd like to do something about the truly tremendous amount of grime on your person, I suggest a visit to the tidy little room over yonder. It's called a...
I know what it's called. You, though...
The traveler put a hand to their chest.
What about me?
Traveler. Fox. What do I call you? There was a silence.
Whatever you like, I suppose.
That's a lot of freedom.
Then I'll trust you to exercise it wisely.
They left him there. He found he was still frowning. Something of their indifference struck him as true, and some other part of it resonated in the hollow of his heart. He didn't like to think of why he recognized the feeling, so he glanced at his wrist. The cuff was dark. He had seen no trace of B-556 since he woke. He pushed down a second shallow pang. Someone had left a tray of foodstuffs on the low table beside the bunk. Not rations, either. Rice steamed in a bowl alongside stewed vegetables and an unidentifiable, toothsome protein. On the whole, better fare than he could often expect. It left him rather unable to sleep. Yet sleep he did, somehow, after what felt like hours lying on his back with his eyes closed, unbearably aware of the vessel thrumming beneath him and the absence of the voice within. He was woken a mere few hours later.
A bit of practice,
said the traveler as they led him down to the cargo hold in the belly of the Crow.
If we don't clean that rust off you, you're going to be gored by a demon before you ever get us to Reizu.
Now the Ronin stood in a cleared section of the long hold. Cargo containers had been shoved about to make rudimentary obstacles or arranged in the loading zone just outside. Though fed and slept, the Ronin itched with an odd loneliness. B-5 had passed them on the way down and chosen to say little more than a cursory greeting before returning to assist the pilot's debate with the navicomputer. The voice had not spoken at all. Perhaps this was why he relished the opportunity to face his opponent. The traveler sat on a low stack of containers at the far end of the cargo hold observing the Ronin, weighing their opponent as the Ronin intended to weigh them. He had seen their skill in a manner of speaking, their precision and the extravagance of it. They had not yet moved against him body to body. He hadn't even seen them run. More than that, he wished to see them. Though he had from the start been aware of their natural presence in the Force, it stubbornly eluded his ability to make sense of it. Where the bandit had shone radiant and boiled dark all at once, the traveler was a shadow in an ill-lit pool. The Ronin wondered how they would shine when they faced him, uncloaked. At the same time, his limbs buzzed with apprehension. It had been decades since he last fought anyone he didn't intend to wound. The notion sent a thrill through his blood. Therefore, it concerned. But it was the old woman, Chia, who stepped out onto the scraped floor, electrostaff held loose at her side. She read the hesitation in his posture.
Really? She snorted. I near-brained you mere hours ago.
So she had, although she misread the reason for his stall. Either way, it wouldn't do to disrespect her, so he inclined his head to agree. They slid into position across from each other. The traveler watched intently.